My side is the wild side. Lord, I wish I didn't have to be choosing, choosing sides. Indivisible humanity increasing to insanity. I find myself caught in the middle of a war against the wild, and I am choosing sides. My side is the wild side. My side is the side of life. My side is the wild side. Caught in the middle, one more individual human discerns she is not alone, her heart learns.
Welcome to Speaking of Animals. I'm Lori Sonnenfeld, and I have with me author Ken Foster, author of The Dogs Who Found Me, What I've Learned from Pets Who Were Left Behind. Hi, Ken.
Hello, how are you?
Fine. Welcome to KBOO. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm sitting next to my pit bull Sula, actually, and she's suddenly being distracted by something. I don't know what it is out on the street, so I'm sort of looking at her like, you know, calm down, we're on the radio.
Well, that's the big advantage of doing this by phone, even though you're in New Orleans and I'm here in Portland. We get to do it, talk, and your dogs are there.
I know, so they can, you know, butt in and correct me if I'm misrepresenting them at all, I guess.
Right. So this book is all about rescuing dogs and the dogs that found you, that you, some of whom you placed in other homes, some of whom you kept.
Yeah. I've got three dogs that I have kept, one of whom I intentionally went out to a shelter and adopted, who is sort of dog number one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Brando, who, it turns out, I didn't know it at the time, but he's a Great Dane pit bull mix. So he grew into this enormous horse of a dog, mm-hmm, while we were living in New York in a tiny, tiny one-room apartment. And then I have Zephyr, who's a Rottweiler Shepherd, who I met at a book signing a few years ago in Florida, and who I brought home as a gift to Brando, essentially. And then I have Sula, the pit bull who showed up outside our house one day.
And who is the dog on the cover of the book?
That's Sula.
Oh.
That's my little pit bull.
Oh. I had no idea, and I've been looking at her. The face is so incredibly intelligent.
I know. She's got a great face, and the photographer did an amazing job taking that photograph. but it's funny because so many people ask me who that is or what kind of dog it is, not having any idea that that's a pit bull. Even though everyone has an opinion on pit bulls, of course, but frequently they actually don't know what a pit bull is.
Mm-hmm. So let's, we're going to talk more about pit bulls in a minute, but how do you think you became someone who notices dogs who need help?
You know, I think part of it, I think it's sort of hard to explain. One of the things I wanted to try to do in writing the book was to figure all of that out for myself, because I hadn't been a dog person, really, until I went to Costa Rica. And there's so many strays there, and yet somehow, you know, the strays there, at least in the little village I lived in, they were allowed to come into the restaurants and, you know, sit at your feet waiting for your scraps. So their lives weren't quite as desperate, or at least they didn't seem so, as most stray dogs that we come across. And yet, because I came in contact with so many of them there, so many dogs, I just started to become sort of enamored of the way they live and how smart they are and how friendly they are and how intuitive they are. And I think that made me those things as well. You know, I got more in touch with the sensibilities and the sense of appreciation of what's around us that most of us sort of shut off as humans. And yet you spend time with animals enough, and particularly with dogs, and I think you start picking up on some of those things. So I just started finding dogs, and, you know, never intended to become a dog rescuer necessarily. But I just, one after another, kept running into dogs that that needed my help. And also, I think I recognize that it's so easy, really, to help an animal, that it isn't such a huge burden, that it doesn't, you know, if you do it responsibly and intelligently, at least, you know, doesn't get in the way of the rest of your life, really. In fact, it makes your life better. So I think that's, you know, sort of the way I came around to becoming a dog rescuer.
How do you see it as easy? Because I think a lot of people listening might not see it as easy to help an animal.
Well, I mean, it just, you know, it might take a couple hours out of your day. It might take a couple hours out of a couple days. It might take some time over a number of weeks, and yet it's time well spent, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think when you consider the things that we throw our time away on,
mm-hmm.
Without even thinking about it, to devote a couple hours to saving an animal and getting it off the street, and even if you're not, like, crazy about animals, just, you know, there's a need for animals to be off the street, whether it's to make their lives better or also just to make our community safer.
Mm-hmm.
Because dogs on the street are, you know, can be dangerous, or they can cause accidents, or they can, you know, be a health problem. And usually it just takes a couple hours to pick a dog up and either take it home or take it to a shelter near you and, you know, see what you can do to help them at the shelter if you can't bring the animal into your own house, which, of course, many people can't. You know, I think if everyone just did a little bit, we would solve so many of these problems. And yet, for the most part, people don't do anything at all. And then you have the people who work round the clock, you know, spending every minute trying to address the problem,
uh-huh.
you know.
I loved what you said about becoming someone who notices dogs who need help. And some people rescue cats, some people rescue dogs, and some do both. But that a lot of your friends were people who didn't notice.
Yeah, in the beginning of the book, I talk about driving down a road with a friend, and we're headed straight for a dog in the middle of the road. And he doesn't see it, and I keep saying there's a dog, and he's like, where? And it's like right in front of us. And then finally he's like, oh, that dog, yeah, he's always in the middle of the road. So it's like, so for some people, I think it just doesn't register that there's something wrong with that picture, you know?
Uh-huh.
Also, I think having been through so many different, you know, sort of horrible tragedies that take place over the course of the book, including you know, September 11th and Hurricane Katrina and my own heart problem. You know, there's so many different sort of forms of rescue that are depicted in the book,
mm-hmm.
whether it's me taking an animal's life and making it a little bit better, or whether it's those animals returning the favor to me, or whether it's, you know, caring for the people around us. And I don't think you can separate all of that out. I think what we do with animals also reflects what we do with the people in our lives and in our communities. And so, you know, it's all connected. It's not that animals need more help or that people need more help. It's that we need to sort of recognize the living things around us and do what we can to contribute towards everybody having a home, at least, you know?
Yes. It was astonishing to read the book and find that you and your dogs had been present at both in New York at 9/11 and in New Orleans for Hurricane Katrina, or practically in New Orleans. I guess you were an hour out of town.
Well, we lived in New Orleans. We fled before
mm-hmm.
the storm hit,
mm-hmm.
and then we ended up in Mississippi, which was not the place to evacuate to, of course, in this particular storm.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended up in a house that was destroyed in the storm, and then, you know, kept going from city to city for a while until we could finally come back to New Orleans.
It's quite a story of survival. The whole book is really, you know, optimistic, hopeful book of survival. That's what I saw in it.
I know. And it's funny because when you write a book, I think you never quite know what it is you're writing until you've finished writing it.
Uh-huh.
And I was sort of taken aback when I looked back at what I'd written and what I'd actually lived through, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it is kind of remarkable in a way, all that's happened to me and to the animals and all that I've learned through those experiences. I mean, I think part of the book, too, is whether you're an animal person or not, it sort of, you know, deals with the unexpected things and the unexpected problems and the unexpected forces around us that, you know, we need to deal with each day and make a decision on how we're going to respond, or if we're going to respond at all, you mm-hmm. know, whether it's, you know, and in my case, it happens to frequently be walking outside and seeing a stray dog sitting outside looking for some help, you know.
I think you've been not only deputized, you've been magnetized.
Yeah. It's funny, I was at a reading in California last week, and they brought in a bunch of animals, you know, a bunch of stray shelter animals that were looking for homes, and they had a little pageant down the aisle between the people and the audience. And there was this one 9-month-old enormous pit bull puppy who, when he got to the point where he was supposed to walk down the aisle, he turned and saw me standing off to the side, and he pointed towards me, laid down flat on the ground, wiggled his way across the floor to my feet, and then rolled over on his back.
Cute.
I know, it was very cute. And of course, I said to the audience, "This is obviously a very dangerous dog."
So how do you think being rescued affects dogs who find a new home? Do you think they're grateful?
Yeah, they know and they appreciate. And even when, with dogs that I've, you know, ended up placing somewhere else, when I've met them again, they remember me. Mm-hmm. You know, they know exactly who I am and what role I played in their
mm-hmm.
life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I say that, you know, people say that dogs have a limited understanding of the world, and I don't think they necessarily articulate things in their mind the way we do, but they do know. They do know things, they sense things, and they're aware of not only what their situation is, but also what we do for them and what it means to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with my dogs, they knew, I mean, this is the sort of opposite of that, or the paying back the favor. When my heart stopped working and I didn't even know it, I just thought I was really, really tired for months. But my dogs knew something was wrong, and my Rottweiler would try to revive me when I was sleeping, because I wasn't really sleeping. I was going unconscious.
Mm.
And she would sit on my chest.
Mm.
And I'd wake up, and she's sitting on my chest. And I just thought, still, I thought, how strange. I didn't think there must be something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'd been aware of anything at all, I might have gotten help sooner. But my dogs just kept jumping on me until finally I went to the doctor and discovered that half my heart wasn't working. And when I came back with a pacemaker, the Rottweiler put her ear to my chest and wouldn't leave.
Oh, she could hear it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. They sense these things.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't think, you know, it's not like Zephyr was saying he needs a pacemaker, but she was like, there's something wrong. There's
uh-huh.
something that is different from what it was before.
Yeah,
you know?
It sounded in the book like she was thrilled to that you had fixed it.
Yeah, yeah. She was very happy. And yet, of course, it made me really uncomfortable at the time, because I was just getting used to the idea myself.
Mm-hmm. What do you want people to know about pit bulls, and how did you get interested in them?
You know, like everything else in my life and in the book, it happened accidentally. And basically, I just, I didn't know what a pit bull was. You know, I had heard about them being these horrible monster dogs. And then when I found out what they actually are, when I saw, you know, photographs of them, I realized that I'd known dogs like that for years and years and years. That my neighbors had dogs like that in New York. I would play with dogs like that in the park. So I was kind of shocked, like, wait, that's a pit bull? That's the dog I've been hearing about? And so that's part of it. And also because there are so many pit bulls, I mean, I've heard estimates that they might make up 22-23% of the entire dog population in our country.
You mean purebred or mixed? Or
Probably a mixture of both. But
uh-huh.
But there are so many of them that frequently those are the dogs that you're going to find abandoned or abused or both. And often because people take them and want to make them into mean dogs, if the dog doesn't become mean, then they throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they want to fight the dog and the dog doesn't want to fight, they throw it away. And I mean, it's funny because people will get a pit bull to put in their yard as a guard dog, and the dogs are so innately friendly to humans particularly that the dogs get stolen all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like because people just walk up and the dog will go off with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're so playful and they're so hilarious and they've got these great sort of practical joker senses of humor to them that I feel a deep connection to the whole breed, and I feel horrible for the way they've been treated by people who try to fight them or by people who you know, really abuse them in order to get them to fight. And also the fact that, you know, this idea that they should be manned because that will solve this problem when the problem really is the human behavior around them.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should be addressing that, and yet I think law enforcement are reluctant to address the people, and they would rather just have a policy on paper saying no pit bulls.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the people who do illegal things with the dogs aren't going to care that it's illegal because they're already breaking the law.
Mm-hmm.
So it just seems like a huge waste of time when, in fact, we should be using that same money and that same, you know, effort to address responsible dog ownership regardless of breed. Also, I mean, people think that they attack more often than other dogs. If you really look at the statistics behind dog attacks, you'll find that the owners of the dog, whether it's a pit bull or another breed, have histories of criminal activity, of abusing other humans, of being cited for animal violations that have never really been brought to trial or addressed.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems like the common factor is not the breed of the dog, but the kind of person owning that particular dog that might do something wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned something when I heard you at Powell's about that it was a pit bull in the Little Rascals.
Yeah, the Little Rascal dog was a pit bull. Buster Brown is a pit bull. If you go back, you can find really great vintage photographs of like 2 and 3 year old kids who would go with the family dog to get, you know, a portrait done wearing suits.
Uh-huh.
And it's always a pit bull.
Uh-huh.
I mean, not always, but frequently a pit bull. There are a whole series of advertisements of, you know, wholesome, like white bread kind of ads, where the image is a child and a pit bull in the kitchen with a
uh-huh.
loaf of bread.
Uh-huh.
And it's just like, what, you know, one of the things I want to try to work on for perhaps another book is sort of what happened, you know, like what happened that
yeah.
this dog wasn't always viewed in this way. And yet now, not only is it sort of abused in a widespread way and also, you know, looked at as being the only problem dog that there is, which is also not the case, but also the image in the media is so negative
mm-hmm.
and reinforces all of these negative ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Even, you know, lawyers who claim to be pit bulls in the courtroom. and actually, there's a case recently where, I forget where it was, a law firm advertised themselves as being pit bulls. And they used an image of a nasty, angry, aggressive pit bull dog, and the Bar Association gave them a big fine.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
So we're down to just a minute or two left because we're in the middle of our membership drive, and we're going to be talking to people about KBOO in a moment. But I just wanted to give you an opportunity to wrap up and say anything that you'd like to about the book.
That's such a difficult question.
I'm sorry. Let me ask this then. Why do you suppose you so strongly resisted adopting your third dog, if you can tell that briefly?
Well, part of it's that I made a commitment to my first two dogs when I brought them in to my house, and I didn't want to take away from what I was able to do for them,
mm-hmm.
you know, because the more dogs you have, the less time you have for each of them. And also, I just thought with a third dog, it makes it that much harder to find room to take in any others temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't want a third dog. And as you know, reading the book, I went through all kinds of efforts not to keep her until finally I realized that I was completely in love with her. And we'd been through so much together with her health problems
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
that there was a bond that we had from going through that together that I just thought, you know what, she's going to live with me now.
And you know, another interesting thing I found it, I just want to point out to people who are listening, you didn't have the finances necessarily to take care of these health problems, but you went to an organization who found you a benefactor who would take care of her medical bills if you would take care of her.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she sort of has a trust fund, I always joke. She's
yes.
a pit bull with a trust fund.
Yes.
But they put me in touch with a woman who sponsors pit bulls particularly, because she has several that she's rescued herself, but right. She travels a lot and can't take any more in.
Ken, I have to wrap up, but okay. I want to thank you so much for being with us, and I want to remind people that we do have copies of your book, which is called The Dogs Who Found Me, What I've Learned from Pets Who Were Left Behind.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thanks, Ken.
Bye.
And I do want to, I know Justin is going to be talking with you, and I want to talk with you, too, and let you know that if you become a member of KBOO right now, you're going to have the opportunity to get a copy of this book, The Dogs Who Found Me. It's a wonderful, optimistic, fascinating story going from 9/11 right up through Hurricane Katrina and this man's adventures with dogs finding him. He's just a beacon. What do you think, Justin?
I thought this was a wonderful example of the diverse advocacy which KBOO represents. We are advocating for so many different communities, and not even just bipedals. You know, we're uncovering prejudice here. I mean, there's so much prejudice against a particular breed, and that's just another way that KBOO enlightens all of you in Radio Land, and that's why we need you to show a little support. Get a copy of this book. All you do is get on the phone and call 503-232-8818 or toll free 1-877-500-KBOO or online at kboo.fm. You know, dogs sense things, and so do you. You sense that giving is the right thing to do right now. You smell a bit of responsibility, and that's why we're asking you to take just a minute. You know, dogs smell tornadoes. We adults smell responsibility. So get on the phone right now. Follow your intuition. Put the you and I back in community radio and get on the phone and call 503-232-8818 or toll free 1-877-500-KBOO.
And, you know, Justin, I want to thank people who do call during this program. We're only on once a month, half an hour, to talk with you about animal issues. And I really appreciate those people who've been in touch with me about this show, who encourage me to keep doing it, and who seem to be enjoying it. It's still kind of a new show. It's been about a year and a half now, I think. And we're so excited to be able to bring it to you. And if animals are important in your life, and this show has helped you or informed you, I'd really appreciate it if you call right now at 503-232-8818. Just go to your phone, pet your cat or your dog on the way, talk to your bird, and give us a call at 503-232-8818.
And this is just another wonderful example of how KBOO serves the community as an electronic bulletin board, really getting the word out for so many different kinds of issues, whether that's dog rescue or movie talk earlier. It's just really an example, as I was saying earlier, of how advocacy takes so many different forms, and diversity is really the heart and soul of the mission here at KBOO. We're not even restricted to the bipedals. And, you know, I'd say even if perhaps animals haven't been directly that important in your own life, we all know people for whom they have been important. I mean, anyone who's ever seen a seeing eye dog, anyone who's ever read any of the studies about bringing animals into hospice care and noticing that blood pressures drop, you know, animals are around us, and this is just another example of the kind of information that KBOO brings to you every day of the year. So we really need your help. There's really today only one thing we ask of you, and that's maybe to find some change in your couch or in your car, to do whatever fits your budget, but to get on the phone right now and call 503-232-8818. As I was saying, just three sustaining members, that's 33 cents a day, $10 a month, will take us over this program goal. And remember, Lori and Kate in the air room and all of these people are volunteers, and there's only one thing they ask in terms of that service that they do for you, and that is to meet their program goal. So do call toll-free 1-877-500-KBOO, and we would really like to give you a copy of Ken Foster's book, The Dogs Who Found Me, What I've Learned from Pets Who Were Left Behind. This is just one of the many thank you gifts we have. We know you're tuned in now, so we think this one will be extra special for you. It's really a pleasure to listen to Lori's interview with Ken. Folks, the programming is your reward. We're even sweetening the pot with books, wonderful thank you gifts. Do make the call right now, 503-232-8818 for a copy of that book. Toll free, 1-877-500-KBOO.
That's right, Justin. I do want to mention we have two phone lines left open. We'd love to see those light up with your call of generous support here at your community radio station, KBOO. Please do call now, 503-232-8818. Bring your credit card to the phone. Become an instantaneous member of KBOO Community Radio. See the difference it makes in your life when you listen to KBOO and you know that, in part, we are on the air because of your participation. It really does do something to your perspective when you realize that you have empowered yourself to become a supporter, a partial owner of an independent media resource that is KBOO. 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. I know we only had 5 copies of Ken's book, The Dogs Who Found Me, for that $60 pledge. I know that many of them have gone. I believe we might have one left. Do call right now, 503-232-8818. Again, bring your credit card to the phone. Join KBOO instantaneously. If that doesn't work for you, maybe you don't have your credit card handy or you're heaven forfend driving, go ahead and then just give that call. Make your pledge of support. We're happy to send you a bill with a return envelope to make it easy for you to join KBOO, your very own community radio station. 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266.
And thank you very much, Ani and Justin. We'll be back to them in a little bit.